manage that kind of system for individual pharmacists and pharmacy operations. Arasi is a new company that we're really excited about based on new non-invasive brain imaging technology, which in all the tests we've done shows great promise for non-invasively identifying a whole plethora of neurological disorders which currently cannot be diagnosed until late when symptoms occur or through some invasive approach. And finally, we have some work that we're doing with Professor Ned Mohan, who's developed a new electric motor which promises to provide 40 to 50% more efficient use of electricity. And if you imagine the number of machines and operations that involve electric motors worldwide, and given our worldwide energy crisis, you can imagine the potential impact of a device that increases efficiency by 50%. So all of these are new ideas that have been spawned, nurtured, and launched through our new process. Finally, what is the advantages of startups? Clearly, contribute to economic development. They provide funding for our research. But here's a very important point that I'd like to make. Historically, the data all supports the fact that startups, based on university technologies and arising from universities, have a much higher success rate than startups that arise from technologies not originating at universities. And part of it is the additional oversight, the critical analysis, and the professional development that universities offer for their startups. So I think they have a leg up to begin with, and they're far more developed at the time they launch. Finally, we can help with job creation, and we get there's a better return than just outright licensing of the same technology when the opportunity exists. I would like to be honest with the committee and tell you that commercialization in all of its aspects, startups or licensing, is a high-risk venture. Based on data provided by the Association of University Technology Managers in 2004, their most recent data set, only less than 1% of all licensing options from universities in the United States last year generated more than $1 million in licensing or revenue. So 99% of the time, these are low return opportunities. So we have to be very disciplined in picking those opportunities and enhancing their probability. It represents an unpredictable revenue source. It involves significant operational costs, and the returns typically are years and decades in the future. Therefore, it requires a long-term commitment on the part of the university and will involve academic culture changes as a result of what we're trying to do. The key point here is that despite this, the university recognizes commercialization as a high-impact activity that we want to consistently stay committed to. It can be managed to avoid conflicts with academic values. It's an essential function of a leading research university, and its significance is increasing. If you just look nationally, this is an activity that all universities are either doing now or increasing their activities in. Despite uncertainty, we need to establish an environment to optimize performance, and the university is committed to our continuous improvement in this area over the long haul. So at that point, this is where the first section would end, the longest section of all, but I would be willing to answer any additional questions you might have on this section if the committee so desires.
Thank you. Are there any questions by the committee? Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Vice President Mulcahy, I have the concern, and that is that over time, I understand the desire to do this, and it's important, and it seems like everything you're doing makes sense. I work at a software startup company, and my experience is, without being pejorative, that people don't always identify what the best opportunities are very successfully, and the best business plans, after 2 months don't make any sense anymore. And the concern I have is that if you emphasize research that is viewed in its initial stage to be promising commercially, it may have a chilling effect on other kinds of sort of pure research whose outcome is not at all clear at that point. How do you avoid that issue? And then the kind of follow up question to that is who are the responsible parties in your office? I mean, presumably you, but is there what kind of oversight is going on as well?
Those are great questions, very insightful questions, and questions that we as a university and universities nationally have had to wrestle with. One of the things that I will tell you outright is that the real heart and soul to the innovation that's represented at universities, particularly the University of Minnesota, is the creativity and drive of individual faculty. So we in no way, shape, or form are interested in harnessing, directing, or restricting that creative inquiry that is essential. And in fact, it is that creative inquiry that generates the aha moments or aha opportunities. We are not looking to stifle that. We have no plans to force faculty who are not interested in participating in this process in doing so. What we're really doing here is working with faculty who have recognized the opportunity, have recognized the potential, recognized the obligation, if you will, to translate this to benefit, and create an environment that makes it possible for them to do that. So we're very sensitive to distorting the academic mission and have measures in place to prevent that. The other point I'd make to you is that there are always, these kind of situations always introduce potential conflicts of interest. Are your interests more in that direction than what your primary responsibility at the university is? And we have an extremely well-developed and compliant system for conflict of management overview and supervision. All our faculty and staff are required to disclose their outside interests on an annual basis. Any faculty involved in a licensing deal or a startup, there is an additional review of their particulars so that we can be sure we sort out those kind of interests. We always are going to run the risk of ideas that look good and ultimately fail. And in fact, if you look at our history, many of the companies we spun out in the past failed shortly after they were outside the university because at that time the university didn't exercise long-term oversight and management of the potential. What the new process with the Venture Center entails is direct supervision and oversight of the management and achievement of milestones. And if those opportunities go fallow, we actually reclaim the intellectual property for additional licensing opportunities. So I think you're absolutely right. The points you made are right on. And I think we've attempted to the best we can and using best practices across the country and, in fact, in some cases, actually creating what is recognized as best practices across the country, we've attempted to address those kind of concerns. But you're absolutely right that we always need to remain attentive.
Representative Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice President Mulcahy, on page 11 of our packet, you had a slide about the caveats. And one of them was, will involve academic culture changes. And I had a question about that. I think probably higher education as an institution is slow to change.
That's higher education.
Very kind of you.
Yeah. And I understand that. But we're in a fast-paced global economy. Certainly, the biosciences are the cutting edge of that. Mm-hmm. How? Well, my question specifically is, what academic culture changes need to be made?
Sure.
And the second part is, how can the legislature help?
Thank you very much.
Oh, another simple question.
Yeah, that's another great question. What I'm talking about typically with academic culture change here are twofold. One is we need to raise the awareness of some faculty as regards the opportunity to do this. I know when I was doing my own research for 25 years, very seldom did it occur to me to say, is what I'm doing in the laboratory something that might have potential as a intellectual property commercialization opportunity? I just was unaware of how that worked. And so one of the culture changes is making people aware of the opportunity, not driving them to them, but making them aware. The second is, and we hear this from our very entrepreneurial faculty, is that the traditional academic reward systems are based on teaching, research, and service to the community. Research very often is not defined to include this kind of activity. So many faculty say, we do this, we want to do this, our research is ideal for doing this, but it takes time and energy, and there's no academic recognition in the system for making that contribution. So we as a university are now looking at our systems regarding tenure, promotion, and merit and pay increases, and are advocating for recognition that this kind of activity is an appropriate academic work product in certain settings that is deserving of consideration when faculty come up for tenure or promotion. That's being vetted through faculty governance. The reaction has been very positive. But it's those kind of culture changes. If we're going to encourage this activity, we need to be sure that participation is not a disadvantage.
Thank you.
Dr. Mulcahy, I don't, in the interest of time, I don't want an answer at this particular time, but I will be asking so that I can share with the rest of the committee. These startup companies that you have had in the last 5 years, how many are still in business? How many employees, as compared to another five-year segment right in front of it? What part of this, to me, this committee does is encourage the other members of the legislature in the state of Minnesota to understand the importance of the U of M as a research and as a job creation engine, and that would be good for us to have.
Be happy to provide you that information, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And then just for other members, I saw someone had to move a microphone around in front of another member speaking. Even when the mics are this far away, if you're talking about that sick child at home, it generally picks it up. It's just when it's over here that we can hear it a little bit better. But just so everything that's said in this room by a microphone is picked up and recorded for about the next 100 or so years. Dr. Mulcahy.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney. What I'd like to do now is talk about a new initiative, a new office that we created at the university, which is already turning heads and getting great accolades, I think, from our corporate community. And that's the introduction of an Academic and Corporate Relations Center. We refer to it in the vernacular as the ACRC. And let me just summarize for you. I showed this slide yesterday, and I want to iterate that although the ITASCA group wanted us to do something like this, and the ITASCA group was primarily centered in the Twin Cities, we recognized the need to reach out across greater Minnesota to provide the same kind of benefits and services to companies outstate, if you will. And so we did ask companies, these 30 companies, and they're summarized on this slide, and I can give you more detail later if this slide is illegible for you or the handouts. But we asked them what they were interested in, and as I shared with the committee yesterday, these are the things in the order of importance to these companies that they recognize at the university. These access to great students as workforce, continuing education opportunities for their staff, opportunities to consult and provide, do research with university faculty. And last but not least, lowest among their priorities was actually to look at the university as a source for purchasing intellectual property. One of the big things that ITASCA wanted was a way for the corporate community to easily access the university, which they characterized in many cases as a black box. And certainly for those outside the university, it can be a very confusing and complex organization. So what we've done is created what we refer to as the front door, the Academic and Corporate Relations Center. I've included a handout with a brief description of this for you. It's a new division that reports to my office. We've hired four new relationship managers who actually work with corporate accounts to help them understand the university and access university resources, while at the same time allowing the university to better understand the needs of our corporate partner. Our relationship managers are organized by specialty and sector so that we have technology experts, we have biomedical experts, and we have agriculture experts serving in this capacity. There's a direct relationship with our strategic corporate partners, and we also have opportunities for general contacts from all types of other organizations throughout the state. It's an active outreach. It's a two-way street. We have very good dialogue going back and forth, and it integrates many of the relationship networks within the university. The university is like a nervous system, and what we're trying to do here is introduce a central nervous system that knows what's going on across the university and can help people access it more effectively. And it's a highly responsive system. We attempt to provide responses to queries that we get within 48 hours, which, coming back to academic time, is speed of light. I want to point out the picture here because this picture is a little more subtle than perhaps I had hoped it would be. But what you see in that particular picture is two doors, a very large door and a very small door within the large door. And that's just to remind me to point out that we have designed this such that one size does not fit all. We provide service and opportunity for small companies that big companies may not be interested in, and vice versa. So we're attempting to address the diversity of companies in the state. The ACRC provides what we call a three-legged stool of services. A concierge service function, which basically connects people. You call and ask, is there somebody at the university I can talk to about this business issue? We will make the connection for you and hook you up so that you get the information you're looking for. You don't have to surf the web. You don't have to make hundreds of phone calls. We have relationship managers with our outreach function to actually meet and work with companies at their workplace and understand their business needs. Business web interface, which I'll share with you in a moment, which is a more general access point. And we have many support mechanisms, including activities and events. We hold about a dozen activities at the university each year with in participation from the corporate sector, from government, from the university, and generally our attendance is 300 to 400 people at these events talking about technology issues and corporate issues of interest to businesses in the state. The concierge service is a Monday through Friday personal contact opportunity. You'll see there's some contact times here. We're looking for people to use the front door to the university. We have a website. We have an email address. We have a toll-free number for out-state Minnesota. So we're really trying to be as accessible as possible. This is just a quick picture of our relationship management team. I can tell you right now, we are limiting this service to the state of Minnesota until we can understand really what's involved with providing this kind of high-level service. We want to restrict that availability to companies in the state. Right now, we serve 28 large companies, 22 medium companies, 32 small companies, 18 trade associations, 6 government agencies, and 2 international governments with these set of 5 relationship managers. We've also organized a quick access point to the university. It is the first website devoted specifically to business and is a first point of contact for the business community. Access to services, students, faculty, continuing ed, research, workshops, and seminars. And we're in the process of fully customizing or developing a fully customizable website that contains specific information of relevance to individual companies so that they don't have to flip through multiple pages to get what they're looking for. The response from our partners to this introduction of this academic and corporate relations center has been that they view this as a fantastic development at the university and one that we're very proud of. And that basically ends my section on corporate relations in this new office, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have on that.
She's got the gavel.
You're back in the room.
If not...
Representative Root?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just wondering, are there fees? Do you charge the businesses fees, or how is this financed?
At this point in time, we're not charging any fees for these services. Again, some of this is being funded by funds available in my office through our royalty return from commercialization. We anticipate that if we show a significant benefit to companies, many companies already have various subscription services with the university, and we'll approach them for the possibility of a subscription service. It would be, if we did that, it would be a tiered service such that, you know, the charge to large corporations would be very different than the charge to small startups and new companies, which we will probably continue to provide this service for gratis as a service to the community. But in the future, long-term funding of this initiative does include in the business plan some form of subscription or membership fee if we can collect that. But right now, and for a period of the next 3 years, we're going to be funding this through internal reallocations.
Representative Norton?
Chair members, Vice President Mulcahy, I had a question. You talked about this first point of contact.
Right.
Can you tell me how you have made this a first point of contact, how you get your information out, and people know that this is the place to go?
We have a communication plan that is in early stages of development, but I'll tell you one of the more clever things that has been done already is that this Academic and Corporate Relations Center consists of some incredibly talented people who've got great networks already and have been at the university and connected throughout the state as part of their previous career. And what we've done is compiled a very, very long list of companies, agencies, trade associations, etc., throughout the state, and had a mass mailing to them of a University of Minnesota chocolate bar, which included within it a small magnet, an announcement letter saying we're doing this, and a small magnet with the contact information. And the response to that was larger than we had anticipated, and we've gotten all sorts of calls. Can you send us some more? We'd like to distribute them. So we're at the very beginning stages of communicating this.
The information?
No, both. We're using every gimmick we can come up with. But the point is, people are really beginning, before we even began to officially announce the availability of this website, through informal contacts, we were already fielding about 20 queries a day. We're up now to anywhere from 20 to 50 inquiries coming in and out of the office in various ways. And so it's been a great success, and I think success will breed success, and success will breed increased awareness, but we also have a campaign of distributing material to get this information out there. Finally, if I may, Chair Mahoney, just go to the concluding section, which is really talking about university industry research partnerships. One of the things that is actually a major problem for university industry partnerships nationally is issues associated with intellectual property when there's an association between a company and a university. Who owns what? Who gets to profit from what? And many times these negotiations have become so contentious and involve so much effort with really little benefit at the end of the day, because many of these relationships don't generate intellectual property. They just generate great interaction and new basic knowledge, that companies have told universities in no uncertain terms that unless we can find a better way to work together, we're taking our work offshore, because universities across the world are now competing with U.S. universities for research partnerships with corporations, and they're making it extremely favorable to work with companies. And so if we don't get our act together, we're going to lose the benefit of the corporate partnership, and the country will lose the benefit, its competitive advantage, of the working relationship between universities and corporations. I'm happy to say that we've recognized this as an issue, and an issue that we are committed to rectifying at the University of Minnesota. And as a tangible evidence of that, the university was one of the first universities to join what's known as the University Industry Demonstration Partnership, which is sponsored by the National Academy of Science. It includes currently 40 universities in the United States and 20 companies, major corporations. And the intent of that group is to find more effective ways to work together to maintain an American competitive edge and to help economic growth that results from university-industry partnership. This is a huge advance for the University of Minnesota. We're recognized as being on the forefront of efforts to do this. Recognizing what companies are looking for from us and recognizing that intellectual property is pretty low on their list suggests to us that our strategy for working with them should not put a prime premium on intellectual property, but more on the other elements of our relationship, and that's our rationale for doing this. So emerging principles at the university include what we call collaborative innovation, opportunities where we will work directly with companies on a research interest directed at a critical need. We renewed commitment to long-term partnerships and relationships not based on individual intellectual property transactions. Far greater flexibility in our negotiations, an increased responsiveness when we try to work with companies, and far better internal coordination within the university to avoid any hiccups in the process. This has been extremely well received by our corporate community. They're very favorable to this change, and I think we're going to see a much healthier university-corporate partnership. The other thing I would mention to you that's a great advantage, and I think this came up in yesterday's discussion, which is why I wanted to highlight a couple of examples. But the university has some very strong university industry consortia on campus, and perhaps one of the better known is iPrime. It is a consortia of the University of Minnesota and many, many corporations, about 40 industrial members from Minnesota and across the country. It really works as a very collaborative partnership addressing critical research issues. And I would just summarize for you, for the benefits of the company, they get a scientific exchange with the academic sector. There's influence. They get an opportunity to help universities understand what their research needs and critical issues are. Leverage government funding. So through our creation of this partnership, we are able to get increased funding from the National Science Foundation for one of our centers to the tune of $3 million a year. And benefits the companies in that relationship because that federal dollars help support additional research. You can see I won't go through all this, but one of the key things I would point out is one of the benefits for the company is that it's an opportunity for their staff to work at the university in laboratories shoulder to shoulder with our faculty and students. And many of the students who participate in those laboratories ultimately end up working at iPrime companies. So it's a great opportunity for companies to get great talent. For our faculty and students, it's a chance to actually have access to industrial source of research topics and challenges, funding support, because these companies do pay a membership fee to be part of this consortium, which I would underline is evidence of what they see as the value. They aren't going to pay membership fees to do this if they don't see a benefit. Technology implementation, we get great faculty interactions, and we also get to work in our laboratories with industrial fellows. Students learn great industrial research processes and interactions and get to hone communication skills. So it's a mutual benefit from that. I'm just going to mention one other one because Art Erdman, who was here with me yesterday, is responsible for generating a new consortia along these lines, the Minimally Invasive Medical Technology Center. It is much like iPrime, a university corporate consortium. But I highlight this one because it addresses critical needs that were identified for this committee by the Biobusiness Alliance of Minnesota and their assessment of what the state needs with regard to research to support the medical device industry. Now, I come back to the concept of transforming, and this is a picture that we use at the university to kind of highlight what we're trying to do in our transformation process. And you can see perhaps what the origin of that particular structure was in terms of the ideal. This is our Northrop. But one of the things I'd like to conclude with this committee on is what do we need to succeed? I think this is a very important thing. First of all, we need state-of-the-art facilities. And this is just a quote from a Star Tribune editorial, which appeared earlier this year, which basically says that, you know, we need a strong university research to keep our bioscience industry strong, and that, you know, an investment in bioscience research is really critical, and we would echo that. In addition, I'd like to summarize for you what we're up against in that battle for facilities. I'm just going to very quickly put up the top five public research universities right now, and what some of the investments that we know they have made recently, specifically in their bioscience infrastructure. And you can see across the board, it is extensive and impressive. And it's this background that we as a research university are competing against. And we need continued support for new facilities to enable us to advance the research agenda necessary to support the state's bioscience business. What we need, as I said, are state-of-the-art facilities, adequate state support to provide competitive salaries for faculty. We've got great leaders here, but they're all too easily picked off by more lucrative compensation elsewhere. Fellowships to support the best and brightest students, and then programmatic support for research initiatives to promote Minnesota's future. Some of this you'll hear in the university's biennial budget discussion, which will provide additional details. Finally, we need your continued support. And on behalf of the university, I'd like to thank all of you for this opportunity, but more importantly, for everything you do for us. Mr. Chair, I conclude my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Vice President Mulcahy. Are there any questions from the committee? Any questions? Well, I actually have a couple here, and I'm referring to the second to the last slide on page 22. What are we up against? You have UCLA as the number one medical school, University of Michigan, just under, well, 470 square feet in 05 and 235,000 square feet in 03. Are these buildings built or are these on the drawing boards?
Chair Mahoney, it differs across the various universities. For example, the dates that I included in there were, if there's a date, those are actually opening dates. So 2005, 2003, those buildings came online. University of Wisconsin, for example, their first of three interdisciplinary research complex buildings at a total cost of $134 million for each. That is in progress and will be completed in 2008. The $375 million Institute for Discovery is in early stages of development, so it'll be probably 2010 before that's completed. But any of the others which have a date here was either the date of occupancy or the predicted date of occupancy. For example, at UCSF, they are basically building an entirely new biomedical research campus, which will open in 2008.
Am I reading that correctly? 2.65 million square feet of research facility at UCF San Francisco?
You are reading that absolutely correctly. They are opening a brand new campus.
So is 2.6 million square feet, I'm trying to think, is that like the size of the Mall of America?
I'm probably the worst person you could ask that question.
Where's the point to
that?
I
can tell you this, it's extremely large. And I don't know what our total square footage is as a comparison, but this is a very, very large investment. And the thing is, they already have a campus for biomedical research. What this represents is state of the art, and they're moving out of their existing facilities entirely into this new facility. So this is just to give you an idea, again, of what the competition has done. With the help of the state, we've also added some new buildings online. But what we really need in order to plan effectively and to have a strategic development plan for hiring faculty and developing programs, it would be ideal if we could have a sense of consistency about the future funding for infrastructure, for facilities in particular. If it's always on a two-year cycle, you never know exactly what you're liable to be able to get from the state to support building on a two-year cycle, so you can't plan beyond two-year increments. To be successful, we need to be able to plan multiple years out. So, for example, the Biomedical Sciences Bonding Authority would provide that reassurance that there is a specific plan covering the next 8 to 10 years that we could plan for having the facilities and therefore recruiting faculty and identifying appropriate research areas.
And that the new authority you're asking for totals up to just under a half a million square feet of
I would
research.
Have to rely on my
I'm sure
six,
someone will
600,000
square feet.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, thank you. It was a
tour de force.
No, what I was going to say is it's a good opening to what the university does. You did a fairly quick overview. I've been pestering or following, whichever you care to use, and I'm sure you'll use one or the other, for the last couple of years. And I know that you just scratched the surface of what the university is trying to do and doing over on the campus there. So I urge you and the other members of the committee to spend some time together to kind of enlighten everyone what you do over there. We have many venues going on here in the state, from the university to Rochester to St. Cloud to Worthington and, every place in between.
Mm-hmm.
it's the preview of this committee to start looking at this and to educate the state and the other members of the Capitol, at the Capitol here, how important this is for the state. So I appreciate your time here. I appreciate the university coming over to give us this overview. But by no means is this the detail that I think these committee members need to understand and where we can go. So again, I appreciate that. If there's any other questions from the committee members?
Just ask one quick question. When you're talking about competitive salaries, is that coming from other institutions or is it more from the private sector?
Chair Mahoney, members of the committee, that's coming from comparison with other universities. We are not terribly competitive. We can provide you specific information on that, but it is a significant challenge for us.
That would be good to have some of that information.
We can provide you that in detail.
In keeping with the traditions in Minnesota, I guess this is a new committee, so I get to start a new tradition. Are there any members of the audience that would care to add or contradict anything that the Vice President has said? Well, seeing none, thank you for your time. Thank you for being here. I'm going to reiterate my invitation to the members for the the Minnesota Partnership for Biotechnology and Medical Genomics. Read that piece in your pamphlet, and if you can make it, it would be a good use of your time. Other than that, the committee stands adjourned. Thank you, members.